the other argument that you never hear, which I often think you should make, which is, it's kind of a question of liberty. Like, why shouldn't I be able to do this with my own money? I'm over 21. Quite bizarre that, again, that doesn't really, you know, well, people would like to do it. It's their own money. Why shouldn't they be able to do it? Like, those, that should be number one.
Welcome once again to Low Rollers, this edition being recorded early Thursday morning on not nearly enough sleep due to a late West Coast playoff baseball game, although the exhaustion was made worthwhile by the gift of a couple of Schwarbombs. I am Eric Raskin, Phillies fan, in case you are unaware, also the senior editor of Casino Reports. You can find my work at CasinoReports.com. as well as LotteryGeeks.com and InGame.com. Coming up shortly on this week's podcast, I will be speaking with Nigel Eccles, a name everyone in the industry surely knows, as he was one of the founders of FanDuel. These days, he's the CEO of BetHog, part of a rapidly growing segment known as Crypto Casinos. So he's coming up on the pod. We cover a whole range of topics, including Nigel loves playing blackjack, and he will reveal which card he most dreads the dealer showing. How's that for a tease? Quick anti-tease as well, though, a heads up that my microphone kind of sucked throughout the interview. I think I just didn't have it well positioned, and I was totally unaware of how it sounded in the moment, so I sound almost like I'm calling in from a landline, even though I'm the host of the pod. But the good news is Nigel sounds fine, and what he has to say during the conversation is much more important and interesting than what I have to say. So that's coming up in just a couple of minutes, but first, it is G2E week. Today, Thursday, is the last day of the expo. I was not there this week, though several of my colleagues at Third Planet Media are or were there. And it is my understanding that, to the surprise of no one, the hottest topic at G2E all week has been prediction markets. Now, allow me to take you back to 1 year ago. I was not at G2E last year either, but during last year's G2E, I spoke to Davis Catlin, the managing partner at Discerning Capital. And he told me that the hottest topic by far was sweepstakes casinos. Everyone who wasn't already involved in sweeps was trying to figure out how to get involved in sweeps. That was only a year ago. Things can change real fast in this business. Now, sweeps aren't dead. There are still plenty of people making money in sweepstakes gaming, but it definitely isn't the hot topic anymore, and nobody's looking to dive headfirst into it. So just keep that in mind as we hear new breaking news every day about prediction markets. They have this seemingly limitless potential for now, but nobody has a clue where they'll be in a year. It's all very volatile, and so much depends on assumptions people are making about legality, assumptions that may not hold. This Tuesday on Casino Reports, we ran an article by Steve Ruddick, one of the business's most respected journalists, talking about how there are a lot of whispers about prediction markets finding a way to offer casino games. And Steve spins this to wondering if the threat of prediction market casino, whatever exactly that looks like, will be the kick in the pants states need to finally start legalizing good old-fashioned real money online casino. The pessimist in me says, come on. People have tried every strategy under the sun to convince these state legislators of the tax money they're missing out on and of the way people in their states are playing these games unregulated and unprotected anyway, and none of that has worked, so I don't think this will work either. I mean, good luck explaining to your state rep who doesn't know how to turn the camera around on his smartphone, the one who's constantly butt-dialing his grandkids because he doesn't realize there's a lock button, good luck explaining to him how roulette via prediction markets works. So, I don't see this as the threat that spurs legalization. I do, however, see it as a real threat. The way things are trending with prediction markets, casino games via prediction markets are a very, very real possibility, and maybe sooner than you think. All right, let's get to the interview. I don't quite cover the topic of prediction market casinos with Nigel Eccles, but we cover just about everything else, so enjoy a few seconds of music, and when I come back, I'll be joined by Nigel Eccles. whatever segment of the gaming industry it is that you want to talk about in 2025, be it prediction markets, daily fantasy, sports betting, online casino, crypto casino, you name it, my guest this week on the podcast has experience and expertise in it. So I'm very excited now to welcome two Low Rollers, the co-founder and CEO of BetHog, and most famously before that, the co-founder of a little company called FanDuel, Nigel Eccles. Nigel, thanks for joining me on Low Rollers.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show.
So there's a lot of ground to cover here, but I want to start with the newest innovation at BetHog, the world's first AI blackjack dealer. Before we get too deep into this conversation, is there something you can say to me that will prove you're actually the human version of Nigel Eccles, and I'm not just talking to AI Nigel while the real Nigel's out golfing or something?
We're not quite there yet. You know, I'd say one of the hardest things we find is, the dealer is repetitiveness. So if I keep repeating the same thing a lot, I would start to get suspicious. That's the one thing we haven't quite cracked. We're still working on that one.
All right. Well, from what I can tell so far in our interaction, you seem human. I'll play along as if you are. But tell me seriously about the idea behind the AI dealer, Sunny. Was it because you felt like there were particular inefficiencies with human live dealers? How did this all come about?
So blackjack's probably my favorite game that I play in the casino. It's one that's kind of my go-to. I play blackjack in Vegas. I've played in Monte Carlo. I've played in Singapore. And, you know, it's interesting because the core game is the same everywhere in the world. Maybe some minor rule changes, but pretty much the same. And what really makes a game fun or not is often the dealer. You get a really fun, engaging dealer. Like, even with your losing, it's still a fun experience. And so with live dealer, and live dealer is a really big market, $15 billion market. I sort of always think, oh, this is so cool. We're going to have a live dealer and it's going to be like a fun experience. And I'd say my experience is 90% of the time, that's not the case. Like, it's very, like, they're very mechanical. And I think it's challenging for them because most of the dealers, English is not their first language. And it's very late at night. They're having to, like, do the mechanics of dealing while entertaining, like, people who are just, you know, like, they can't see them or engage with them. And so we sort of thought this seems to be like such an obvious opportunity for using AI, creating an AI avatar. And so we got to work with it. We discovered there's a lot in which the AI can be really good. A couple of things where AI can be a lot better than real people is AI can remember you. Like, you know, you could have a personal dealer. She can remember you from last week. Like, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks, right? She can remember what you like to play. She can remember how you play. So that we discovered immediately she was better in a lot of ways. A lot of ways, they're, you know, we are still perfecting, which is they can be quite repetitive, although a lot of blackjack dealers are very repetitive. They have the same thing they say if you hit 21. And so we've been doing a lot of work on that. But yeah, really, the concept was really birthed out of my own experience of playing blackjack and being kind of disappointed in a live dealer and going, we could make this really fun, like all of the time, always fun. And so that was kind of the genesis behind it.
My mind does go to some strange places as you're talking about the dealer, like getting to know the player, remembering their tendencies. You know, you can't help but think of like the Joaquin Phoenix movie, Her, where he falls in love with the voice on his cell phone. I guess you want your players to develop an interest in Sonny, but I guess there's a line, right?
Yeah. I think we're still, even at the level of AI is at, we are some way off there. You know, I think they struggle with small talk, right? You know, it's I think, you know, without that kind of sort of small talk and intimacy, you know, they sometimes just sort of struggle like with conversation. And so I still think we're quite far off there, but I think they can bring a lot. And I think the other thing that I've noticed is a lot of it, like, this is an entertainment product, and a lot of people, when they engage with AI, sometimes they will enter into that fiction. They want to sort of treat the other person as a real, or the AI as a real person. And so I think we're all knowing, like I kind of interact with AI all the time, and you know, you kind of, you give them some latitude, you anthropomorphize them as if they are a person, even though deep down you know they're not. So I don't think the technology is there yet. I don't think it'll be there for a while. But I do think it's a, even though it's not deep down, you know it's not a person, you can still have that entertainment with, you know, engaging with them.
Okay. All right. So pulling out a bit to the wider Bedhog product, why a crypto casino? Why did you go in this direction? And does it matter much to you that you were launching something that you know you can't currently operate legally in the US or UK?
So a bunch of areas, like the crypto casino space is big. It's probably about $10 billion in revenue. So that was attractive to us. We felt that we could innovate a lot on product, which was really important to us. And I think the other thing is being in those markets that are more lightly regulated means you can innovate much faster. So, you know, we could go from inception, like we have this idea of a product, we can very rapidly go into development and we can launch it. Whereas in a regulated market, that's a much slower process. And so what we want to do is to really perfect the products in the unregulated, in these lighter regulated markets. And then once we are more at maturity, then we would look at the more regulated market. So we do think that, like, it is only a matter of time before there's AI dealers in the US. We would love that to be our products. But the way to get there is to really prove the product in the international markets first.
All right, well, that leads perfectly into sort of the big topic on my mind with all of this as a US-based journalist is what the timeline you think may be for when crypto casinos, for when your product could potentially be part of the legal regulated US market, or is it
It's
so
hard.
far
So
off
it's,
that
yeah, it's hard to say. You know, I'd say the US has leaning much more into crypto. The change in administration last year has had a dramatic effect on crypto in general. For gaming law, it's typically state level rather than federal. And there we haven't seen the same revolution. Like, I don't think there's a single state in the US where you can take, where licensed operators can take crypto as a deposit. Which to us is crazy. Like this, you know, crypto is the opposite of what a lot of people think. It's just, it's a horrible thing for money laundering. It's a horrible thing for funding terrorism because it's completely traceable. And whereas, you know, the best one is cash, right? So it's kind of like, and also the benefits to the casino are measurable because the costs are so low. Like it, FanDuel and DraftKings are paying something like 15% of revenues in payments. Like we don't pay anything. Like we don't have to pay anything. We just put up an address, user sends us crypto, and it's in our account. There's whole classes of fraud that we don't have to deal with. So I would love to say it being soon, but I just know that the state gaming commissions are very conservative, and you know, maybe it's more like 3 years, to be honest, 3, 4 years, but I think it's, you know, it's coming.
okay, actually, that seems like a reasonably optimistic timeline, I guess, although
I like to like to think like 1 year, like why can't we have it
right.
today? Like it's
Right. Right. As an innovator and entrepreneur, I'm sure everything feels like you'd like it to be yesterday, but
tomorrow, yeah, sure.
and so I guess on that front, in terms of how slow things sometimes move, you know, legal regulated iCasino in the US, here we are, some 13 years into it, and we're still at 7 states. How surprised and/or disappointed are you at how slow the expansion has been there, especially compared to
Yeah,
sports betting?
it's probably in line with my expectation from quite early on. Like, I kind of didn't think, I knew there was casino states, and those were ones that we could get into for casino. And then other states, we always knew were just going to be a lot harder. There was, you know, as an operator like FanDuel, we could get tens of thousands of people like writing to Congress people and say, hey, we want sports betting. can't really get that for casino. So much harder. It's also on like a land-based casino. It doesn't employ tens of thousands of people, right? Like you can't get the culinary union to be supportive, or the people who typically are politically influential. And so that's really challenging as well. So it doesn't totally surprise me. It's kind of disappointing. It's in that, like, the US from the outside, everyone thinks it was this incredible free market. In actual fact, what you discover when you're in here, it's a free market, but it's so heavily driven by, vested interests. And that's sort of like a huge challenge as well, which is like what I've sort of seen is innovation in the US gaming market nearly always comes from outside the gaming market, right? So we had us 2009 to 2017 DFS. That was outside the market. We had DFS 2.0, Prize Picks, Underdog, again outside the market. And now we have sweepstakes and prediction markets, again outside the. So it's a little depressing that there isn't regulatory framework that isn't that actually protects consumers but also promotes innovation. It sort of seems in this market that it can only really happen outside of it, and then the sort of the regs trying to catch up to deal with what's actually happening. That's kind of disappointing.
And it's just so many people you have to win over, it seems, along the way. And it seems like the main cases for legalizing now pretty much come down to either someone arguing the state needs money, we have budget problems, so let's do this, or people are doing it with offshore anyway, so we may as well legalize it. Are you in New York State? Is that
I'm
where
in New
that
York
goes?
State, yes.
Okay, so certainly that's a state that people think could move
Yep.
eventually soon, and it seems Addabo's main argument has been those two things I just said. They're doing it
Right.
anyway, and we need the money. Do you feel like New York's maybe once the brick and mortar casino stuff is done with in the next few months or so
Yeah,
that.
like potentially, I'm not, Albany is somewhere that I'm often forced to go as opposed to, travel voluntarily.
Wow, shots fired at Albany.
It's funny. Last time I was there, I was like, where is everybody? It looks like I'm not the only one who doesn't go to Albany. Like I was there in a working day and it was like deserted. I was looking for where was the chemical spill announcement that no one told me about. They got all these big buildings and like no one. It was deserted. It was a very strange place. But the one thing that I always think is funny, again, I always hear those two arguments. The other argument did you never hear, which I often think you should make, which is it was kind of a question of liberty. Like, why shouldn't I be able to do this with my own money? I'm over 21. Quite bizarre that again, that doesn't really, well, people would like to do it. It's their own money. Why shouldn't they be able to do it? Like that should be number one, right? Like, but yeah, my experience of statewide politics is that that is almost never the number one reason, which, maybe I'm too naive.
So I'm very eager to get your take on the ever-changing world of prediction markets. Since people may not realize that before FanDuel, you were the founder and CEO in 2007 of HubDub, an
That's
early
right. Yeah,
prediction
with the
market.
prediction market.
So yeah, way ahead of the curve on that one. What do you make of the way that sports betting through prediction markets, or sorry, sports event contract trading, the way that
Swaps,
that's taken
derivative.
off this year? What do you make of
It's
what's been going on there?
been fascinating. And actually, even before Hubdub, I was with Betfair in 2000. I launched a betting exchange called BetDAC in Dublin, which is still an operator in the market. And then 4 years ago, I launched a product called BetDex, which is a decentralized betting exchange, operates in the international market. So you could say I'm a fan, right? Like I'm a huge fan. I've been a fan of betting exchanges for prediction markets for 25 years. I still am. I still think that they are a really interesting product. I've always thought that they would be a product that would work very well with the US market. There's definitely a trader mindset in the US where people want to trade. I think that I often felt that people should take sports books to, I don't know if there's some sort of advertising council for lack of truth in advertising, in that they often sell that you could win, but if you do, they limit you.
Right.
And I think that is a huge case in favor of prediction markets and betting exchanges, which is anyone can win. Like, winners are welcome. And so, whereas, the books will, like, and even my old company FanDuel will sell this, oh, you could win X, and but we all know that you can't consistently because you get limited. And so I'm a huge fan of prediction markets. I think the fascinating thing is how they've entered the market through the CFTC. I'm not a lawyer, but I do find it very unusual that the federal government is going to sort of backdoor sports betting into the states when it's been, like, for as long as, well, PASPA was an absolute no, this is a states' rights issue, right? Like,
Right.
PASPA was repealed explicitly because the Supreme Court said, no, this is not up to the federal government, right? This is up to the states. It would be very weird that the Supreme Court, if this goes to Supreme Court, would then say, no, actually the federal government could go and grab it again. I don't, well, again, I love betting exchanges and I love prediction markets. I am skeptical. I don't buy their argument that they are that they're a swap and not sports betting. Like, a
Right.
sports bet on an exchange for a consumer is almost identical whether it's on an exchange or on a sports book, right? And I don't think it's distinct enough that one of them should be classed as a, federally protected swap and the other is a sports bet. And I do think I understand why they make that argument. I just don't personally don't buy it. I think from a consumer perspective, they are almost identical.
And I guess, you look at someone like Kalshi and Tariq Mansour, and
Yeah.
they've been very bold and brazen with just sort of like, we're going to do this
Yeah.
and let's see if they stop us. And I guess there are some parallels to what you went through with
Yeah.
DFS for FanDuel. So do you sort
Yeah.
of identify with his sort of aggressive spirit with this?
Oh, absolutely. No, and I think all credit on him to, like, getting this to where it is today, pushing through the CFTC. I think that's fantastic. And if I was in his shoes, I would probably do exactly the same. No, I think they've done an incredible job at pushing this to the forefront. It's just like, it's going to be, I think it's going to be like, I'm glad I don't really have a stake in it,
Right.
because I think it would be great. I think it would be great if there was a thriving market there. I think it would be very interesting. I think it would be very interesting if there was a, legal clarity and then everyone could compete on a level playing field. I think it would be really good for bettors. I would think it would open up a huge new market. I definitely have a lot of question marks about, the legal landscape for it and, whether it'll truly last.
Do you feel like FanDuel and DraftKings and the other regulated operators are in trouble in terms of the threat presented by this?
I don't like the challenge for them is that they uniquely cannot do it. Because they've been very clearly told by their state regulators that if you do it, not just in the state, if you do this in any state where there's objections, you run the risk of losing your license in this state. And so, other people can do it. DFS operators like PrizePicks and Underdog can do it. Polymarket can do it. Kalshi can do it. Like, anyone who doesn't have a state gaming and FanDuel and DraftKings can't do it, that's hugely problematic for them. I think if it was a level playing field where they could do it, I actually think it would be very good for them. It'd be very good for them in that it would allow them to introduce a new product. That product could then be open to a lot of the players that they potentially have limited. It would allow them to go into states like California and Texas and Florida that they don't operate in. It also, and again, this is why state regulars don't like it, allow them to say to state regulators, do you know what? This isn't a sports bet. This is a prediction, an event contract. And therefore, that 51% that I'm paying in New York, I don't need to pay that anymore. So there's a lot for them to like about it if it was a regulated, if it was, they had regular clarity. The situation where it is today is probably the worst of all worlds for them, which is, you know, anyone else can do it, but they cannot. That's highly problematic for them.
Right. It strikes me that I wonder if listeners, if there's like sort of a cognitive dissonance of hearing, you know, one of the founders of FanDuel sort of siding with the limited bettors. But of course, you got out of FanDuel before PASPA, so I guess that gives you ground to sort of be with on the better side in a sense.
Like I don't, I guess I'm as biased to talk my own book as anyone else, but
Right.
I do value being able to say what I really think. And I'm relatively independent in that, you know, I have launched a betting exchange. I do think it's a really good way of betting. We do run a sports book separately. BetHog has got a sports book,
Okay.
but we're not, you know, it's an entertainment product. Like we, I'm trying to think, we don't limit that many users, but we don't really attract that sharp action. You know, if we did, we would limit them. We would say, you know what, this is like, here's a betting exchange, go bet on this. Like I'll
Right.
even, you know, I'll give you I'll introduce you to the team there. And, you know, because that's kind of not our product. That's not where we compete in. But you know, my problem with like the books in the US is they sort of market as if they take that sort of action, but they don't.
Right.
You know, not, yeah, and it's totally within their remit. They're a private enterprise. They have the right to take bets from whoever they want to. I don't think they should be legally mandated to take all bets. That actually would be worse for everyone apart from the small number of sharp players. So I don't have a problem with it. I just think that, you know, it should be clear in their marketing.
Right. That's it. Sound right. Your issue is with the way that they're selling themselves if they're going to try to limit. Right. All right. I want to finish with a few quick non-gambling topics, sort of a lightning round. Few items here. We'll get to know you a little bit. This first one will tell me whether or not you have any teenage daughters. Got an opinion on the new Taylor Swift album?
I have been informed. I've been informed it's a little mid. Lyrics are questionable. So that's what I've been informed. I've listened to
Do
one
you
of
have
them.
daughters?
I do. And I
Okay.
did listen to one of them, and I quite liked it, but you know, I didn't really critically go through it.
Right. Yeah. I haven't heard it myself, but I have a daughter who's a college freshman who's a big Swiftie, and she informs me the same thing. The lyrics are not good, and she even speculated that she feels like Taylor is dumbing things down a little bit so Travis can understand what she's
Yeah,
singing
that's
about.
what
I
I've
don't know.
heard as well.
Yeah. What's the last movie you saw in the theaters?
Last one in the theaters was, what was it? I did actually see one over the summer recently, and it was quite good, and I can't remember. I
I can
saw,
tell you're in the same age demo as me, that the
yeah.
things the recall doesn't come as quickly
I
to our
remember
minds
I
as it used
stayed awake all the way through it, which was quite
to.
remarkable. I did. Oh,
Trying to think what some of the summer blockbusters were. Mission Impossible, Superman, one of
No,
those? No.
no. I saw Superman.
Okay. All
That
right.
Superman was like, okay, it was kind of what I expected.
Right.
I did see a throwback, which was I saw The Goonies a couple of months ago, which was a throwback at a local movie theater. So that was pretty good. That was the last but one. I can't remember what the last one was. Superman was good, but I'll tell you who was really good was Lex Luthor in it.
Right.
Very good. He's in The Great, which is a very good show.
Yeah, why am I black? Nicholas
He's an
Holt,
English
right?
actor.
Yeah,
Tom
Nicholas Holt.
Riddle? Yeah.
Yeah. All right, maybe an easier question to answer than here about movies. What was the first movie you remember ever seeing in the theaters?
Oh.
Or is that not easier?
I think I saw E.T. in America because I lived in Britain at the time. And back then, Americans probably don't know this, but we got our movies like a year after America.
Okay.
And so we came to America that summer, and we got to go and see it. Like I got to see it a year before my friends, which was quite something.
All right, yeah, we must indeed be right around the same age, because that's
Yeah.
one of my, for me it was like Raiders of the Lost Ark and then E.T. were
Yeah.
like some of the first ones I remember. All right, absolute best restaurant in New York, if money is no object. Favorite
Oh.
restaurant in the city.
Favorite restaurant in the city.
Or I'll open it up to favorite restaurant, period, if you don't want to be limited to New York. But yeah,
I really like Friend of a Farmer, which is down on just off Union Square,
okay.
which is a very nice spot. I don't think it's the best in the city. It's always very solid.
Okay.
Yeah.
What style of food is that?
Well, it's kind of farm to table is the
Okay.
idea. So, and it sort of moves with the schedule, but it was right beside my old office, so I used to go there a lot.
Okay. All right. And final quick question for you. This one is a gambling question. Let's say you're playing AI blackjack with the AI dealer Sunny. She deals you a 12, and she has a 2 showing. Do you
That's
hit
a
or
hit.
stand? What's your It's in every time for
That's
you.
a hit. Yeah, 2 and 3 are both a hit
A 3
against
is always a hit against a 2 as well. I feel like
yeah.
I feel like
Well,
that
no, the
doesn't
two
quite go by
against
the
the
book, right?
three. Sorry, against the dealers 2 or 3, a 12 is a hit for both of those.
Okay. All right. So
That's
you
certainly
mean.
on our rules, which is infinite deck. You
Right.
can one card and split aces. Yeah, so we have. I kind of know all those corner cases.
Right. All right. But and it speaks to in that gray area of the two against the two, where there's a debate between some whether you should or shouldn't. It speaks to you like the action, and you're an aggressor.
The worst, to be honest, the worst card from a dealer is when a dealer's got a two up. Like when a dealer's got an ace or a 10, and maybe I've got like a 15, I'm like, okay, this sucks. I'm probably going to lose this hand. A
Right.
two gives you hope,
Yes.
but nearly always screws you. Like then I very rarely see a dealer two and they hit a 10, then a 10. It just like seems to never happen. They give it two. And then they deal themselves a 9, and then you're like, what? And then it's a 10. Like
Right.
they just, I don't know what it's about a 2, or like it's a, a 9 and then a 9, and then they screw you. Like the 2 is the worst. Every time I see a 2, I'm like, oh, you think you're going to win, but you're not. You're just not going to win this hand.
Yeah, no, I have a distinct memory as a young man of doubling down against a 2. I think I had a 10. That may so maybe that
Yeah.
may, I think I had a 10, and I said, I'm going to double this one, and the dealer tried
Yeah.
to talk me out of it, and I wasn't listening, and sure
It
enough, I
isn't still a
lost.
double. A 10 and 11 against a 2 is still a double,
It
but it's
should
just like
be.
cursed. It's
Right.
cursed. I don't know why. I just see the 2 and I'm like, okay, that's going to game over this one.
All right, excellent stuff. I appreciate your candor and ability to cover all sorts of topics. I will just direct everyone to bethog.com, of course, is a
That's it.
place. Is there anywhere else they should go to learn more
Well,
about
you
what
can
you're up to?
find me on Twitter, Nigel Eccles. You can see I don't post a lot, but you will see me post about prediction markets a little bit at the moment.
All right, excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. It was great talking to you, Nigel.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, my thanks again to Nigel. So true about the dealer showing the deuce. It really does seem to be a case of false hope way too often. Just so many ways the dealer can get there with the two. Speaking of false hope, a lot of Survivor pool entries got obliterated last weekend, mine included. I was in the gigantic DraftKings $10 Survivor pool, the only entry I had this season. I am a low roller, let's not forget. Got through the first 4 weeks in fine shape, using some semi-obvious picks, nothing too contrarian. But in week 5, I decided it was time to gamble. There are 150,000 or so entries to start in this thing. You're going to need to survive all 18 weeks. So it was time to use a team that there's no chance I'll need available later in the season. So I took a shot on the New York Football Giants in a game that was a coin flip on paper, but that I believe they should more likely than not be able to win. Even though it was on the road, it was against the winless New Orleans Saints. As you probably know, the Giants did not win. So be it. I took a shot. It didn't pan out. But there was some comfort in knowing that almost no matter which team I'd chosen, it wasn't going to pan out. Had I not already used the Arizona Cardinals, they might have been my first choice at home against the Titans. I considered the Dolphins at Carolina, though I considered that slightly riskier than the Giants. I thought about the Bills at home against the Patriots or the Rams at home against the banged up 49ers. The only team I had on my shortlist that won was Detroit at the Bengals. And I did think Detroit represented the absolute safest pick of the week, but I really preferred to save the Lions for later in the season. Oh well, so it goes. I'm out of my survivor pool, and had I made a different choice, well, I most likely still would be out of my survivor pool. I hope at least a handful of you listening are still in yours as we head into week 6. Good luck if so. Good luck with your bets, your fantasy lineups, your casino games, your crypto casino games against AI dealers, and someday soon, your prediction market casino games. Until next time, this has been Low Rollers, Small Stakes, and Hot Takes.